Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that Odyssey app. It is 509, 79 degrees on this Friday, September 5th, 2025. And like every Friday, we bring in our friend attorney Keith Figure to the Figured Law Group for our segment of Do I Have a Case? Thank you for joining us today, Keith.
How you doing, Rob? Pleasure to be here with you and the listeners. Hope everybody had a nice holiday weekend.
Yep. We're back at it now. It was a short week. That's always a good thing. But it's Friday, right?
Exactly.
All right. So we're going to get right into it today because one of the questions, if we can get to it, is quite lengthy. If a lawyer pursues court action or litigation for an issue they know to be invalid, could they face sanctions or discipline?
So in Pennsylvania, lawyers who pursue court action or litigation, and the key word is they know to be invalid, can face sanctions or disciplinary actions under both court rules and professional conduct standards. So to provide a detailed explanation of the relevant frameworks and the potential consequences, I want to start initially with the court-imposed sanctions. So in terms of court-imposed sanctions, Pennsylvania courts have mechanisms to address frivolous or baseless litigation primarily through procedural rules and judicial discretion. So under the court-imposed sanctions, the key provisions include the Pennsylvania Rules of Civil Procedure, specifically 1023.1. Pursuant to that rule, this rule governs the signing of pleadings, motions, and other legal documents. By signing a document, an attorney certifies that, to the best of their knowledge, information, and belief, formed after reasonable inquiry, that the document is not presented for improper purpose, such as to harass, cause unnecessary delay, or needlessly increase litigation costs. The claims, defenses, and legal contentions are warranted by existing law or by a non-frivolous argument for extending, modifying, or reversing existing law, and the factual allegations have evidentiary support or are likely to have such support after further investigation. So if a lawyer knowingly files a baseless claim, they may violate Rule 1023.1, potentially leading to sanctions under Rule 1023.4. Sanctions can include monetary penalties, payment of the opposing party's attorney's fees, or other measures deemed appropriate by the court. Now, there's also Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 11 in federal court. For cases in Pennsylvania's federal courts, Rule 11 similarly requires attorneys to certify that filings are not frivolous, that they don't lack legal merit, or are presented for improper purposes. Violations under that rule can result in sanctions such as fines or cost shifting. Inherent judicial authority. Under Pennsylvania court, Pennsylvania courts have inherent authority to impose sanctions for bad faith conduct or abuse of the judicial process, even outside specific rules. This could apply if a lawyer pursues litigation they know to be invalid. As such, actions waste judicial resources and harm opposing parties. Now, under the disciplinary action under professional conduct rules, the Pennsylvania Rules of Professional Conduct govern attorney behavior and provide grounds for discipline if a lawyer pursues invalid litigation knowingly. Relevant rules there include Rule 3.1, which is meritorious claims or contentions, Under that rule, a lawyer shall not bring or defend a proceeding or assert an issue unless there is a basis in law and fact that is not frivolous, which includes a good faith argument for extension, modification, or reversal of existing law. Pursuing a claim known to be invalid would violate that rule. And then there's also Rule 8.14 for misconduct. It is professional misconduct for a lawyer to engage in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. That's Section C. Section D under that rule is engage in conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice. Filing a baseless lawsuit could be deemed dishonest or prejudicial, especially if done to harass or mislead. So if a lawyer violates these rules, they may face disciplinary action under the Pennsylvania Disciplinary Board, which could result in private or public reprimand, suspension of the lawyer's license, disbarment in severe cases, and mandatory ethics training or other corrective measures. So factors considered for sanctions or discipline, courts and disciplinary authorities will consider factors such as intent. Did the lawyer knowingly pursue an invalid claim, or was it an error in judgment? Harm caused, did the frivolous litigation cause financial or emotional harm to the opposing party, or burden the court? Pattern of behavior, is this an isolated incident or part of a pattern of misconduct? And then evidence of bad faith, was the litigation filed to harass, delay, or achieve an improper purpose? Examples of potential consequences, monetary sanctions, a court may order the lawyer or their client to pay the opposing party's legal fees or other costs incurred due to the frivolous action. Referral to the disciplinary board. Courts may refer an attorney to the disciplinary board for investigation if their conduct violates ethical rules. And reputational damage, sanctions or discipline can harm, of course, a lawyer's professional reputation and standing. So safeguards and mitigating action. So to avoid sanctions or discipline, lawyers must conduct reasonable due diligence before filing, ensuring claims have a factual and legal basis. If a lawyer discovers a claim is invalid after filing, they should withdraw the action promptly to mitigate the potential consequences.
All right. Simple one question, one sentence question, a big answer there. So I appreciate the thoroughness of that, Keith. Next one, probably the same. Can you explain the homestead and farmstead rebates in regards to Pennsylvania property tax?
Okay, yeah, this one is a little bit lengthy, so I'll try to get through as fast as I can. In Pennsylvania, first off, the homestead and farmstead exclusions are property tax relief, which was established under the Tax Relief Act, which was signed into law on June 27th, 2006 and amended in 2011. So those programs aim to reduce the property tax burden for eligible homeowners and farmers by lowering the assessed value of their properties before taxes calculated. The funding of these exclusions primarily come from state gaming revenue, with the goal of providing up to $1 billion annually for property tax relief across the Commonwealth. Below, I'm going to cover more specifically, so the homestead exclusion. So the definition, the homestead is defined as a dwelling, including the parcel of land and other improvements on which it is located that is primarily used as the primary, permanent primary residence of an owner who is a natural person. And that includes a single family home, condominium, or cooperative unit, a pro rata share of real property if the unit is not separately assessed for taxes, and the portion of a dwelling used as the owner's domicile if part of the property is used for non-residential purpose. So the purpose, the homestead exclusion reduces the tax assessed value of a qualifying primary residence, thereby lowering the property tax bill. So for example, if a home is assessed at $50,000 and the homestead exclusion is $5,000, the homeowner pays tax on a reduced assessed value of $45,000. Now, in order to qualify or to be eligible for the homestead exclusion, the property must be the owner's, again, permanent primary residence. The owner must be a natural person, not a corporation or trust, except in specific cases like a revocable trust. The property cannot be a rental unit, vacation home, or camp. In Philadelphia, the homestead exemption is unique, offering a reduction of $100,000 in assessed value, saving homeowners approximately $1,399 annually, which starting in 2025. Properties with a 10-year residential tax abatement are ineligible until the abatement expires. Now, the farmstead exclusion, so the definition there is a farmstead includes all buildings and structures on a farm that is at least 10 contiguous acres in area used primarily for commercial agriculture production. This includes buildings used to produce or store farm products, house or confine animals raised for commercial purposes, store agricultural supplies or machinery used in commercial farming. The farmstead must also be the permanent primary residence of at least one owner. Buildings already exempt from property taxes under other laws are not eligible for the farmstead exclusion. Now, the purpose of this is similar to the homestead exclusion. The farmstead exclusion reduces the taxable assessed value of qualifying farm buildings, lowering the property tax burden for farmers. The exclusion applies only to the buildings and structures, not the entire farmland, unless the land is part of the owner's primary residence. Now, to be eligible under here, the farm must be at least 10 contiguous acres. The building must be used primarily for commercial agriculture purposes. The farmstead must be the permanent primary residence of at least one owner, and farms owned by absentee owners, those not residing on the property, are not eligible. So, now, I could get into the application process just to, I guess, to cover this real quick. Generally, property owners must submit an application of their county assessment office by March 1st each year to receive the exclusions for the upcoming tax year. School districts are required to notify property owners by December 31st of their if their property is not approved or if their approval is set to expire. There is no application fee, and approved applicants typically do not need to reapply unless there is a change in ownership deed or property. I'm not going to get into Philadelphia. There's a lot more here, but I think that's the most important thing. But that kind of goes over what the exclusions are. The best thing that would be is if you did have any questions, is reach out maybe to a tax attorney, that somebody could maybe take them through the process and to see if they qualify. And especially just to make sure, because, you don't want to make any mistakes because you don't want them coming back and saying that you're trying to commit fraud. So you really want to make sure what you submit and what you apply for that you actually meet the standard. But that would be my best bet, is to either reach out to a real estate attorney or more specifically a tax attorney, and they would probably be able to help you go through that process.
All right, we'll leave the final question, because the final question is quite in depth and lengthy, so we'll leave that for next week, Keith. If someone wants to get in touch with you offline about a question they may not want public, how do they do that?
They can contact me directly at 570-954-9299. They could send me an email at keith@figuredlaw.com, and through my website, they could send me an inquiry 24/7 at figuredlaw.com.
All right, and if you want to feature a question on a segment of Do I Have a Case, you can email me at rob.odonnell@odyssey.com, and we'll be sure to get those questions to Keith on a future segment. Keith, thanks for joining the show this weekend, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Rob. Always a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners.
All right, thank you. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 526, 79 degrees here on this Friday, September 5th. So the oldest member of the Congress, the oldest member in the House, Democrat Eleanor Holmes Norton, is seeking re-election, and she says she's not going to step aside. She's 88 years old. Democrat brushed aside growing concerns about her age, saying she will, of course, be running for re-election. I say that my seniority is what is very important, and I'm not going to step aside. Norton, a non-voting delegate representing the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., Norton, who was born in 1937 and has served as a member of the House since 1991, has sparked concerns amongst friends and colleagues who feel she has experienced a notable mental decline in recent years. And this is being reported by the New York Times. A refusal to retire by a longtime advocate of home rule in D.C. is all the more pressing for her district to come increasingly under direct control, but follows a trend among aging congressional Democrats. The issue came into spotlight when Representative Jerry Nadler, who is 78, is 10 years younger than Norton, announced this week that he's finally throwing in a towel, citing the need for generational change in the party. Now, listen, Jerry Nadler stepping aside, that's a guaranteed another Democrat that's going to get in that seat. Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, will be another guaranteed Democrat who will win that seat. So this is simply about power and I'm not going anywhere type thing. It's, watching President Joe Biden step aside for Vice President Kamala Harris in the 2024 election really said something about the necessity for generational change. Now, this is what Nadler said when he stepped aside. The 34-year congressman told the New York Times, and I think I want to respect that. However, Representative David Scott of Georgia, who's 80, John Larson of Connecticut, who's 77, also confirmed that they plan to run for re-election, even amid worries about their health. Generational change is fine, but you've got to earn it, Larson told Axios. It's not like, oh, geez, you know what? Why didn't I think of that? Now it's time for me to step down because, well, it's generational change. Why would someone want to continue to do that? I mean, listen, working in Congress is a demanding job, schedule-wise. I mean, I'm not saying it's hard, but it's long days, long hours, a lot of traveling, a lot of things going on. Why in your 80s and upper 70s would you want to do that? I don't know. It can't be for love of the job, could it? How, with the toxicity that's in these areas, and regardless of party, why would you want to be in that environment? I just don't get it. I mean, I'm looking forward to living life and retiring, whatever. I look at things, and if you look at the average life of a male in America, what is it, 75, 74, 76? So what, I got less than 20 years. I want to make the most out of them, and I don't want it, laying in a bed being sick. So, work is nice, and work is cool, and work is something you have to do, but there comes a point in time where you should enjoy life, too. Well, you should enjoy that next, your grandkids, your children, and travel and see things you haven't seen before and just not have to worry about a commitment to anywhere but your schedule and what you want to do. Interesting that all the way 88 years old, going to work is probably the last, and I don't care where I worked, 88 years old is probably the last thing I want to do is show up to any job. But that's me.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
What else is drawing them? You got to think. It's 5:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Folks, the first weekend of September in the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area always feels like standing with one foot in summer and the other in fall. The air's still warm enough for shorts, but you can already catch the crisp little breeze in the morning, hinting that football, pumpkin spice, and hoodies are already here. And this weekend, our corner of Pennsylvania is alive. You drive through downtown Scranton or Wilkes-Barre and you'll see it. porches buzzing with neighbors, kids squeezing in those last cannonballs at their pools, not the public pools, not many of them. Backyards, grills firing up like it's a competitive sport. In the classic NEPA energy where everybody's trying to savor the best of summer. Let's not forget the local fairs, festivals popping up, whether it's grabbing funnel cake, hearing the cover band under the fairground lights, or checking out classic cars at a community event. This weekend is packed with small-town charm and big-time fun. And for sports fans, high school football season is back in full swing, and you know how serious we take that here. Friday Night Lights aren't just games. They're gatherings. Friends, families, alumni, all under those bleachers cheering until their voices are gone. And hey, don't overlook the outdoors, the trails in Nayark Park, the riverfront walks in Wilkes-Barre, the views from Montage Mountain. Early September is prime time for getting out there. The humidity is finally breaking, but the sun is still generous. Whether you're hiking, biking, or just strolling with an ice cream cone, this weekend is tailor-made for it. So here's the vibe. September in Scranton and Wilkes-Barre isn't about summer ending. It's about blending the best of two seasons. We're grilling in the backyard one night and pulling out the hoodies for a Saturday football game the next. We're soaking in sunshine while secretly looking forward to those autumn leaves to paint our hillsides. So enjoy it, NEPA. This is our sweet spot. The first weekend of September is here, and it's buzzing with everything that makes our home special. Family, food, football, and the unbeatable community spirit. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. As we start to wind things down here, it's 5:42 on this Friday, September 5th. Hopefully you guys have a good weekend planned, your Friday. Anybody doing anything special? We got a couple of minutes. Let me know via text message, 570-883-0098. Let me know your plans for the weekend. If you're planning on doing anything, headed out anywhere, what you're going to do. You going to one of our college football games? You headed out to a high school game tonight? Let us know. Just text it into us and let's see it. So Homeland Security officials say that 475 people were detained during an immigration raid in Georgia. Now, this Hyundai Motor Group factory, I know exactly where this is. I remember when this land was bought. This was an old pine forest, tree farm. I know the area very well. I've been there many times. When they bought the land, cleared the land, and built this warehouse. This is one of the larger plants I've ever seen in that area, this Hyundai Motor Group plant. And it's been right outside of Savannah, Georgia for many years now. And they're building another factory adjacent to it where they're going to make their batteries for their electric vehicles. It was part of the investment under this administration from the Hyundai Group to build more things here to avoid the tariffs. A great thing. How is it that 475 people are working at this facility? In the construction phase, it was not necessarily the factory workers working for Hyundai, but it was contractors and subcontractors building the new facility that were working there. There's something seriously wrong with our systems here. If 475 people at a single work site are here illegally but yet working, are they working on the books? Was their I-9s not checked or verified? What is going on here? Because if this is just one facility in Georgia, if this is just one work site, how much widespread is this happening around the nation? And this is something we truly need to look into. So immigration officials said they detained 475 people. They had search warrants for these facilities. It has even gone so far as the South Korean government has sent diplomats to the area to oversee what's happening here. Hundreds of federal agents raided the sprawling manufacturer site in Jura where Korean automaker Hyundai makes electric vehicles. The lead Georgia agent of a Homeland Security investigation said during a news conference Friday that the raid resulted from a months-long investigation into allegations of illegal hiring at the site and was the largest single-site enforcement operation in the agency's two-decade history. The Thursday raid targeted one of Georgia's largest and most high-profile manufacturing sites where Hyundai Motor Group a year ago began manufacturing electric vehicles at the $7.6 billion plant. The site employs 1,200 people in the area about 25 miles west of Savannah, where bedroom communities bleed into farms. Government Brian Kemp and other officials have touted it as one of the state's largest economic development projects. Now, why is this important? Well, this factory right outside of Savannah, Georgia, If you did not know, the Savannah River and the Savannah ports is one of the largest southeastern shipping ports on our coast. So this is a prime place to get material in, to get material out, to ship things around the nation, to ship things around the world, not to mention the train and other highways that run through this area. Agents focus their operation on an adjacent plant that's still under construction, at which Hyundai is partnering with LG Energy Solutions to produce batteries to power the EV vehicles. So not only are they making the EV vehicles in this factory here in America, but they're also making the batteries here that are going to power those EV vehicles even better. And this was the whole purpose of the threats and the institution of these tariffs, to bring this manufacturing here. Court records filed this week indicated that prosecutors do not know who hired what it called hundreds of illegal aliens. The identity of this actual company or contractor in hiring of illegal aliens is currently unknown, the U.S. Attorney's Office wrote yesterday in a court filing. Well, that's a problem now, isn't it? I mean, we're talking almost 500 illegal workers at this facility. This is not just someone you're paying off the books under the table that stocks your shelves somewhere or stocks your stock in your warehouse in the middle of the night. This is the middle of the day, 500 workers at this state-of-the-art facility that's been touted in news reports all over. Now, WTOC, which is the news, their local TV news down there, I've actually been featured on WTOC a couple of times because, again, I have some roots in Georgia. I have the key to the city in Georgia. Yes, I do. And they've been doing an expose on this facility for over a month now, saying that they have numerous complaints and whistleblowers about the illegal workers that are working in this facility. Well, those complaints not only went to the news, but also went to the Department of Homeland Security, who during their press conference said that they've also been monitoring these news reports and getting information from them, but they also had their own. Now, the South Korean government expressed concern and regret over the operation targeting its citizens. Koreans are rarely caught up in immigration enforcement compared to other nationalities. Only 46 Koreans were deported during the 12-month period that ended September 30th, 2024, out of more than 270,000 removals for all nationalities, according to Immigration and Customs. The business activities of our investors and the right of our nationals must not be unjustly infringed in the process of U.S. law enforcement, South Korean Foreign Ministry spokesperson said in a televised statement from Seoul. So they're giving press conferences from Seoul here, but a large portion of these individuals were illegal South Korean nationals. So we have to look, how are they getting here? How are they being paid? How is this happening? You know, if they're South Korean nationals that are working here illegally, are they getting paid in South Korea to bank accounts there and circumventing our system totally? This is a bigger investigation than we realize. This is something that may open up a can of worms on a lot of scales. The business activities of our investors and the rights of our nationals must not be justly infringed by U.S. law enforcement. Immigration attorney Charles Cux said two of his clients who were detained had arrived from South Korea under a visa waiver program that enables them to travel for tourism or business for stays of 90 days or less without obtaining a visa. Well, they weren't touring. They weren't traveling. They were working. One of his clients said that has been in the U.S. for a couple of weeks, while the other has been in the country for about 45 days. He did not provide details of what kind of work they were doing, but said they had been planning to go home soon. They told reporters in Savannah that while some of the detained workers illegally crossed the U.S. border, others had entered the country legally but had expired visas or had entered on visa waivers that prohibited them from working. He said some of those detained worked for the battery manufacturers, while others were employed by contractors or subcontractors at the construction site. They told they did not know precisely how many of the 475 detained were Korean nationals, but that they made up the majority. No one has yet been charged with any crimes, he said, but investigation is ongoing. This was not an immigration operation where agents went into the premise, rounded up folks, and put them on buses. This has been a multi-month criminal investigation where we developed evidence and conducted interviews, gathering documentation, and presented the evidence to court in order to obtain judicial search warrants. He said most of the detainees were taken into an immigration detention center in Folkston, Georgia, near the Florida state line. President Donald Trump's immigration administration has undertaken sweeping ICE operations as part of mass deportation. The Pew Research Center, citing preliminary Census Bureau data, says that the U.S. labor force lost more than 1.2 million illegal immigrants from January through July. That includes people who are in the country illegally as well as legal residents. So it's not just illegal. Hyundai's site sits on 3,000 acres in a largely rural area of Bryan County, drawing in workers from several surrounding counties and communities, including Savannah. Again, I remember when this facility was built, and it was a big draw for the workforce down there, because you are talking hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs, especially building it. And again, these were pine tree farm forests that were that littered that whole area that were clear cut. Obviously, the lumber was sold and used. And then these huge, I mean, I'm talking huge. You see these huge factories here on 81 and off the turnpike. These are something to be seen if you've never seen it. But how do we get 500 workers there illegally at one job site at one facility? It's just something that needs to be looked at, something that needs to be investigated. You know, how exactly does this happen? We have a system that's supposed to prevent this. Remember when the whole I-9 was introduced and it was that was supposed to take care of it? It was supposed to vet every person who's on the books worker. Now, I get it. It does not stop people who are paid cash under the table, totally off the books. But is that what this is? This is a huge manufacturing facility. Could they possibly have the resources to pay that many people, 500? Off the books, or is there some sort of other mechanism to where they are paid by a South Korean company, Hyundai, maybe into bank accounts in South Korea and circumventing our system altogether? Well, that's 500 workers that aren't paying local payroll taxes, state taxes, federal taxes, and everything else. That in itself is even a bigger problem, if that's the case. And again, an investigation needs to determine that. Let me go to the phone while we have some time real quick. We have Leo from Scranton on Federal Money. Leo.
Yes.
You're on the phone.
I'd like to know if there was any federal money involved, because if there was, they'd have to use prevailing wage. If there was federal money, somebody should have been watching it.
You're talking for the Hyundai plant in Georgia?
Yes.
Well, they're a private company. There might be federal subsidies. There may be tax incentives, but I don't know what federal money is there. I know Hyundai itself is investing billions of dollars in manufacturing, but they're a private company.
Okay, but so there was no federal money involved?
Well, I don't know that. But Hyundai, who is the company that was the site of this raid, is a private company. Could there be federal money involved? Could it be federal tax benefits? There could be.
And that would be a problem.
I think there's a lot of problems here, not just prevailing wage. They don't know who was paying these individuals.
Well, if there was federal money involved, somebody from the government should have been watching it. Correct?
Well, I think somebody from the federal government should be watching any major manufacturing site, but it appears they were, because they've been doing interviews and watching the site for a few months now, finally got the search warrants to go in, and like I said, almost 500 illegal workers were detained.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Leo. As far as federal money goes, again, I think there's multitude of problems here, especially if they don't know exactly how these people were getting paid. Some of them were on tourist visas. Some of them were on non-work visas. Some of them were on expired visas. Some of them came in illegally. What's the infrastructure? How will they know about these jobs? Who's bringing them in? Is it word of mouth? What's the infrastructure around getting them paid or compensating them? How did they get here? You know, does the company itself or a subcontractor pay to get them here to get cheap workforce? you know, that could be trafficking. Again, a lot of unanswered questions here. But the fact that that many workers at one site in a majorly publicized investment for a multinational corporation like Hyundai, it raises a lot of concerns. And again, could it just be the drop of the bucket? It just may be. It's 5:56 here at WILK. We'll be back to close out the show in just a minute. Well, that's it for us today on WILK News Radio here at the Rob O'Donnell Show on this Friday, September 5th. Let me see what we can get in here. Weekend plans, getting ready for rehearsal for opening of a musical comedy called Disaster the Musical, at Little Theater in Wilkes-Barre. Opens next Friday, September 12th. Shameless plug, long-term supporter Rob. Oh, check that out. My plan this weekend is to go out and have a couple of Susquehanna highballs. Maybe the fair. That's what we got going on. So hopefully you have some plans for this weekend, for tonight. Tomorrow, a little rain in and out, but not a washout. So don't worry about it. We'll get through. It is fall, right? Almost fall. Other than that, you guys be safe. Be nice to each other. And listen, slow down outside. Another accident, fatal accident on the Casey Highway. I just talked yesterday about slowing down and how, you know, with the rain coming through yesterday, and that I've seen a lot of increased reports of accidents. And then we had that rollover and death on the Casey Highway up by me. Slow it down. And I know a lot of accidents aren't your fault. They just happen. But, you know, do everything you can. Make sure your seatbelt's on. Make sure those around you, your car seats are good. Your animals are restrained in as well. Other than that, God bless. Be safe. We'll see you on Monday.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.